I'm a time traveler.
Whoa.
Yes, a couple days from now, I will go grab my ukulele.
Whoa.
Set up my microphone, do a little 10-second improvised jingle, and then put it back in time here.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This is the making of the podcast.
Into the podcast. That's it. It's wow. Magic.
That's amazing.
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, because it's now.
Hey, it's Russ from Just Another Review Podcast. We are 9 episodes in and learning lots about how we want to do this show. This episode may sound a little different as we play with the format and our intention, but we'd love to hear your feedback. So please leave a comment in the Apple Podcast or Spotify, or you can email us at jarppodcast, that's J-A-R-P podcast at gmail.com. Sean?
Yes, please. Every bit of your donations help.
Every email helps Sean drink a cup of coffee a day.
Every email... It's the price of a cup of coffee a day. You too can be a part of change.
2 emails, that's cream and sugar.
In the arms of the angel.
Is that Sarah McLachlan?
You know it.
I think Sarah McLachlan was the SPCA commercial of the animals.
Let's get back to the intro. Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Just Another Review Podcast, or JARP, J-A-R-P, to make it easier for everybody.
This podcast is meant to be a companion for you post-episode, a conversation about what you just watched with us, Sean and Russ. And what did you just watch?
Well, what did you just watch? And just like us, you just watched the first episode of Search Party on HBO Max, or in Canada, it's on Crave. Or What? We're not getting through this intro very good tonight, are we?
No, what else? What else can they watch it on?
I said it.
Yeah, I know what you, but you kept on talking.
Oh, I was trying to think of where our friends to the south of the border might be able to watch
on
this.
HBO Max, man.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I'm stupid.
It's
just
written.
Like us. Just like us, you've watched the first episode of Search Party on HBO Max or in Canada on Crave.
And if you haven't seen it, well, that's fine too, but there are spoilers ahead. So, well, you've been warned.
You have been warned. So we're talking episode 1, Search Party, but to flesh out the conversation, we've also paired this with a movie from our childhood. In the past, we've done blind pairings where prior to watching the first episode, we just pick a movie what we think will be similar in themes and subject matter. Sometimes we're right, and sometimes we don't quite hit the mark, do we, Russ? Nah. So, Russ, let's ask you, why did you pair this Search Party show with the 1992 film David Lynch cult classic prequel to the second season run of Twin Peaks on ABC, Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me? Why'd you pick this one?
Well, Sean, thank you for asking. Twin Peaks. Now, it deals with the events leading up to the loss of the female character in a fictional small town on the West Coast called Twin Peaks. Now, Search Party deals with the events following the loss of a female character in the busy metropolis of New York City. Now, in Twin Peaks, Laura, which is the one we lose, is the prom queen, and she's the center of the universe. But in Search Party, Chantal is only a weak memory to her peers, but her disappearance still ignites something in the protagonist played by Aaliyah Shawkat. Stark contrast, but both focus on loss and the impact one character has on the people around her. So, are you ready to get into it?
I'm so glad you wrote a short synopsis for Twin Peaks, because I watched it and I still have no idea what was going on. But now I've got a little bit better idea.
That synopsis helped you more than watching the movie?
Yeah.
But let's start with the episode. So we are talking about Search Party, like Sean's already said. Who's in it? Aaliyah Shawkat. And you may recognize Aaliyah from Arrested Development.
I was like... Who do I know this from? Yeah. Where do I know this from? She was his young Michael Cera's first love interest / cousin in Arrested Development,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Arrested Development never got as good as it did in the first few seasons.
No. Never. Yeah. I had a hard time getting through that. The special fourth season that they brought out.
Yeah, didn't they do two with Netflix? I thought they did two more or something.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but one was they messed with the time.
Yeah, they really mishmashed the timeline up or something.
Yeah, and then the second season on Netflix, they tried to make it more chronological, but still, I don't think.
Too bad.
Didn't have the magic. I think it was very hard to get everyone in the same room.
Oh, like as far as the ensemble cast?
Yes.
And yeah, I don't doubt it.
Yeah. And you could tell. It also, that's sticking on Search Party. Aaliyah's boyfriend is played by John Reynolds. And then there's two other actors, John Early and Meredith Hagner, who play two of Aaliyah's terrible friends.
Yes.
It's directed by and created by Sarah Violet Bliss, Charles Rogers, and Michael Showalter. Michael Showalter, one of the guys behind Red Hot American Supper.
Red or wet?
Wet. Sorry, I'm having a seizure. Wet Hot American Summer. And those are pretty funny movies, and you can also see those on Netflix.
They did the original Wet Hot American Summer, and then didn't they go back and do like a prequel to it like 10, 15 years later?
Yeah, maybe even 20 years later. They did a prequel with all the same actors looking 20 years older, but it was a prequel. Yeah. Yeah, pretty amazing. Might be fun to mention that Search Party had 3 years on TBS before the series has moved to HBO Max.
Yeah, I realized this was not a new show, but it right. was new to HBO Max and Crave. But this originally aired in 19... Oh, my God, 19. 19. This originally aired in 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe didn't get the audience that it deserved, and now that it's on a streaming platform, it's getting a little bit more exposure. And that's how I heard about it. I had seen it on the streaming platform, didn't think too much of it, and then I think I was at the fitness center, the old gym, and I saw a commercial for it on the TV and all the critical acclaim it had received. And I thought, okay, maybe there's more to the show than meets the eye, and so I recommended for us to do it in this podcast. Okay, a little recap for the first episode, season one of Search Party. People are searching the forest in the dark with flashlights, as you do, yelling, Chantal!
Chantal!
Which, you know, obviously losing someone is not funny at all, but if you want to add some humor in it, just name the victim Chantal.
Yeah, not Chantel, but Chantal. She just had to be fucking different, didn't she? Oh, there's a swear jar.
Oh, so every time Sean swears, just Sean, never me. I never swear.
Russ never swears.
But every time you do, you put a coin in the jar.
I do. I feed his family every couple weeks.
It's a cup of coffee. Despite the circumstance, it's hard not to find that funny. Chantal. Meanwhile, in New York City, we meet our protagonist, Dory, played by Aaliyah Shacott. Well, I'm never going to say her name right.
Let's just call her Dory.
Dory, played by Aaliyah Shacott. Yay, I did it right. Dory is crippled by her anxiety and surrounds herself with terrible people. Dory learns her colleague friend, Chantal, has gone missing and becomes obsessed with it. By the end of the episode, she believes she sees a disheveled Chantal in a restaurant, but before she can investigate, the person is gone.
I mean, she didn't even yell for it. All she had to do was yell. She did yell. What am I talking about? But she didn't yell it. She was like, Chantal,
Take a big what?
You take a big poop. She chased her into the bathroom.
What happened to your blouse? Why is your blouse in the forest with blood on it? What'd you think of this first episode here, Sean?
I think that's the most sparse episode recap I ever had, you know, I'm sure. But again, we're relying on people who have already seen this episode, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, you watch an episode.
You came here wanting to learn about this episode and not having watched it yet. You're shit out of luck tonight.
Right.
Right.
Or maybe this will help you to make a decision whether you want to watch this show or not.
Maybe.
You know, who knows why people listen to this garbage? I don't know.
Okay, so I'm gonna go back.
Okay,
I'm gonna go back a bit
in time.
Let's talk about this pathetic boyfriend of hers.
Oh, This man child. Oh my God.
Man child. He's hungry. I'm hungry. She needs to make him dinner. It was like, he had to work himself up in bed basically to climax, and then he rolls over on her just to like ejaculate, and then that's it. Is that how you took that scene?
Are they
scene?
Trying to get pregnant? I assume
that's kind of what I maybe thought too, but then they don't seem like a couple looking to have a child together.
They don't seem ready for a child.
No, they don't seem like a very strong couple. You know, I don't even think they're married.
No.
I think this guy's just screwed up. I don't know what his problem is, but yeah, I don't know.
I think in the first scene where he's introduced, they're sitting at an outside table at a restaurant, and he doesn't have enough ketchup. And he at first, like, his problem is her problem. So he's like, babe, I don't have enough ketchup. And then he's like feebly trying to get the waiter's attention. Like right away, you don't like him. You don't like anyone that's sitting around the table other than Dory. But yeah, he's just very, and I don't know if it's, I don't like him because he probably reminds me a little bit of me, but I think I always, like, the insecurities of myself always wonder, like, am I being too annoying? Am I not man enough to do things? And this guy just comes across.
And yeah, the answer is yes to all those questions. But
thank you.
Yeah, no, but no, you are nothing like this dude. Thank God.
He's like my fears all wrapped up.
He's
into
a man
one
baby.
Character.
He's a man baby. He's completely selfish, self-centered. Anyways, this Dory girl, she surrounds herself with horrible people.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no wonder she has this constant, like, look of just
defeat,
unfulfillment, you know?
Like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Because at first it's really comical, the fact that all, you know, three of her main friends are very superficial, very two-dimensional. They're just kind of ugly people, and you're like, so why is she here? But I guess that's the whole thing, like, you, as you get to know her, you realize that she's, you know, struggling with anxiety, she has very low confidence in herself, and this is maybe why she's trapped herself into this little place. And maybe when the series goes on, we learn a little bit more about, you know, her pitfalls as well as a human being. But so far, all you realize in episode one is that she surrounds herself with very crummy characters.
She must have severe low self-esteem to stay with some douchebag that, like, yeah. Yeah, that treats her like that. And just, she's just a doormat for this guy. And, yeah, it's, at first, some of the situations are comical, but, like, and it's only a 22-minute episode. But, man, yeah, by the time you're finished it, it's, you feel really sorry for her, you know. Yeah. why are you putting yourself amongst these people? You're only as good as the people you surround yourself with, and time to find some new friends.
Well, you should have brought your ukulele.
My ukulele?
Do you have your ukulele?
It's in the closet back there. Yep.
Yeah, you should go get it. You should sing a song, pretend you're
they already get enough of my jingles throughout the podcast.
I just thought that maybe just like Dory's boyfriend, you could play us a little improvised song on your ukulele.
And a one, and a two, and a three. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got a friend named Russ. He's really mean to me, but that's okay, because we got a podcast and we'd like to do it and we talk away. But I guess I gotta do the podcast with him, 'cause no one else want to do it with me, 'cause I am crazy.
Oh man, that
was
funny.
What'd you think of that? What'd you think?
That was great. I loved it. Thank you very much. I think
you're welcome. I wrote that song especially for you.
I thought, you just didn't make that up. You actually wrote it?
I did. No, I wrote it on the spot.
Oh,
like you said, improvise it. I did. Yeah.
Beauty. Do you think, so at the end, Dory believes she sees Chantal in a Chinese restaurant. Do you think that's really her?
I don't know. We didn't get enough great looks at Chantal. And then the girl in the diner is kind of cracky. So right. Looks like she hasn't showered and slept and maybe a little strung out. No judging. But yeah, who knows? I think this Dory girl is so friggin' obsessed at this point that she could be almost like visually manifesting, you know, like hallucinating, you know,
right.
Anybody that remotely looks like Chantal is Chantal. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like is. Yeah. And at the same time, you see the search party like find a blouse, which doesn't say it means she's dead. But I wonder if the series isn't really about Chantal at all, but just all about Dory and her obsession and just maybe this being a trigger for her to change her life. Like, you know, how much of this show is really about Chantal and how much of it is actually going to be about Dory?
Right. Right.
Dory the Explorer.
Dory the Explorer.
The search party.
I think her friends are a bit of a microcosm for sort of the shitty things that go on in society these days about how, you know, it kind of triggered thoughts for me about how people don't seem to care about things or that this day unless they can blast it on social media and let the whole world know that they care. You know right. what I mean? Like, I'm going to make a video and go help a homeless person and give them money. It's like, okay, like if you really feel that way, you don't need to make a video to blast it on your YouTube. You can just go and do it out of the kindness of your heart. And, you know, what I'm getting at is that her friends are pieces of shit and they would just blast, you know, help find Chantal. I'm in so much distress. She was such a good friend and they didn't even know her.
Right.
You know, the one girl gets called out at the party, like, are you okay? Are you okay? And she's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. They're like, your friend that went missing. And she's still like, and then her friend kind of elbows her and says, you know, Chantal. She's like, oh yeah, thank you so much. You know, the family thanks you. And she has absolutely zero communication with the family whatsoever. And I just thought it's kind of, you know, what do they call that these days? Virtue signaling. You know, it's like, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
I'm doing good in this world, but you won't just go do it for the sake of doing it. Publicly let everybody know that you're doing it.
They're all these characters are looking for some sort of meaning in their life. Like they're looking for some sort of significance and they're using social media to help them with that. But really they're just empty vessels.
Yeah. Very fake. Very fake.
Yeah. Yes. A good example of what probably kids are dealing with now.
Right. I did like a bit of the character arc that Dory showed near the end of the episode where she kind of got she's with this I don't know, what is she up for, like a teaching assistant job or something like that?
She's trying to be a leader for a girls club or she's trying to go like for some sort of empowerment workshop. She wants to kind of support. Yeah. She's wanting to take some sort of role modeling position for younger girls or something.
Yeah. She's trying to join this leading women empowerment women organization. And she's literally getting thrashed on by the organizer of this organization, basically telling her that she's good for nothing. Couldn't even teach a kid, you know, tic-tac-toe, you know, here's an organization that's supposed to be empowering women. And this lady is doing nothing but bringing Dory down and basically giving her absolutely no hope whatsoever. So I thought that was kind of ironic. But then when she leaves this interview, her boyfriend, shitty boyfriend, is waiting outside and he can't stop sort of talking or annoying her and she just lets him have it. And I thought that was really good. I really enjoyed that scene where she basically turns to him and tells him just to shut the fuck up. don't even walk, like walk 10 feet behind me, shut the fuck up. Yeah. You know, the tables were finally turned, this guy using as a doormat. And she basically told Big Crybaby Man to stick it up his ass.
And he seems genuinely concerned, but he's also unable to navigate his way around that conversation. So he's actually seeming empathetic. He's just coming across as annoying and not able to actually listen to what she wants.
I think he's kind of socially ignorant too. Right. Like he just doesn't know how to interact with people, you know, and that was clearly shown when he tried to intervene with the troubled neighbor upstairs. You know, it took him forever to go and, you know, quote unquote, do the right thing after he promised, you know, failed promises to do it a couple times. Finally, he gets the balls to let the neighbor upstairs know that, you know, if she's in a bad relationship, that she can come and take refuge downstairs. And she just gives this guy an earful and calls him baby dick and all this shit. And he's just, he has no idea how to react to it. He just with his tail between his legs and he just leaves. Baby dick.
Again, it's everybody around Dory are terrible people. Like the peripheral characters, the main characters, everyone seems to be very ugly.
Except for what I can only gather would have been maybe an ex-boyfriend of hers at that party. The African-American gentleman that shows up for 2 seconds and then leaves. He, although we don't know much about his character, he seems like an old fling maybe.
He seems to be more intelligent, but he also seems to be kind of crummy. When she goes to visit him, he's kind of a little bit crummy to her as well. Like he kind of treats her like shit.
Nobody seems to really treat her very well, do they?
Yeah.
Dory, you got to get Dory, some get self-respect.
Yeah. Like, read the signs.
Signs everywhere. Like
read the
signs.
Missing girl signs. Oh, maybe she's missing. Maybe the symbolism is that she's missing in herself.
Oh, she there you go. And herself. Dory's trying to find herself as well as Chantal at the same time. Mm-hmm.
So
now, did that lady in the woods, did she pee on that blouse or did she just pee near it?
I think she peed on the blouse. I think, or maybe she peed and then she thought there was toilet paper on the ground and grabbed the blouse and wiped her
because wet. When you're peeing outside and you think there might just be random toilet paper on the ground, you grab it.
You take advantage of the blessing.
Oh,
like how often is there just toilet paper sitting like on the side of the road? Why does it?
She should just use a leaf then maybe. Leaf. Have you ever used a leaf out in the woods before?
I think I must have. What if you didn't come prepared and you had to wipe your ass?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever used a leaf thinking that there might be like bacteria or bugs or some shit. And then all of a sudden your
ass is full of
you're
bugs.
Wiping it up your asshole. Now you got some sort of foreign contaminant growing in your butthole and, you know, and then aliens come out and it's all because you wiped your ass with a leaf.
And you wish you carried toilet paper around with you.
The end of the show, the end of the episode. You realize that, there's a missing person and this is supposed to be kind of a mystery because they didn't really stretch that out. It sort of bookends with a bit of mystery and then, so I felt they kind of lost the whole feeling of mystery throughout that episode. And then they tried to tack it on at the end and, fell flat.
Yeah, so again, it's like, what is the show really about here? Yeah, but I think the mystery is just kind of what surrounds this journey that Dory is about to go on.
Man, this shit is awesome.
You suck.
So, Sean.
Yes, Russ?
I'm going to do it again.
Do what?
I'm going to change it up. We're going to rate the episode out of 5. We're going to give it 5. We're going to get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 jarps.
Sakes, Russ. We can just continue with a format for the show like just, in one way.
So this why don't we just try this? Okay, just trust me. Here we go.
Okay, so, I do trust you. So let's do it.
One jarp is like terrible. 2 jarps, it's okay. 3 jarps, it's good. 4 jarps, well done. And 5 jarps, it changed your life.
Okay. Okay. Can we do halves? Can we
you
do halves?
You could do halfies. You could do three quarters if you want. You could do one.
Yeah, that makes it a little more. But I like the halfies.
Yeah.
If I feel the need for a halfie.
Yeah. How many chirps do you give the old Search Party episode one?
Well, considering I can't give it zero, Russ, I gave it one jarp.
Oh, wow.
Show sucked. Oh, I did not like any of the characters. All her friends were so shallow and unrelatable, not to mention you want to smash them in the face the whole time. Dory seems to be searching for anything in her life that has meaning, and I didn't feel for her as a main character. If anything, I just felt sorry for her pathetic life, being everybody's doormat. The disappearance of Chantal is overshadowed by these yuppie New Yorkers, and the whole mystery is lost until the end of the episode. But by then, I was more annoyed with all the characters that I had just spent 20 minutes with that I didn't care to dig any deeper into Search Party.
Wow. There we go.
You like that? How's that for a rating?
That's amazing. You did great. Thank you very much.
Well, I thought I couldn't just give it a number that you would expect me to explain myself a bit. So there you go.
I wish I had my own expectation on myself, because I just gave it two jarps.
Okay, well, now you're Captain Improviser. I don't think you'll have much trouble.
No, I think
let's elaborate. What was two jarps? Two jarps is okay.
Two jarps is okay.
It's just okay in your books.
Again, I hated the characters, but I hated the characters because I believe they wanted us to hate the characters. I think that was definitely a choice that the writers and the creators of the show made. They want you to hate everyone. They want you to see that Dory is standing in shit, literally and figuratively. She's in a hole of her life. Even just talking about it right now, it just really makes me think with you that, you know, Chantal is missing, but so is Dory's missing something from herself as well. So I think I'm interested in that. I think it's well. I thought Aaliyah, is it Aaliyah? Fucking Christ. What's her
just
name?
Just call her Dory.
No, I want to call her Aaliyah. I think Aaliyah Shawkat did a good job. I think she does a good job in probably everything she does. But so I gave it. We gave it an okay. I don't know if I'll ever watch any more of it. I may give it a couple more episodes to just really give it a shot. But there was something there to keep me going for sure.
Feel like you want to throw up?
Okay.
This is the part where we can go back and talk about shows that we reviewed before and if we've continued on and if our ratings were accurate and so on and so on. Russ, I see your list here. You go for it.
Yeah, no, I put in a few episodes that I know that we've stuck with, or a few shows here. Yellowstone, well, you're done. Yellowstone, you're cut up. I'm still working my way through... through season one.
June, season four, Paramount Network. I don't know where it's going to stream or if it's going to stream in Canada, but June, season four of Yellowstone comes out.
Oh, there you go. So are they filming? Are they wrapped? Are they post-production?
I imagine it's in post now, yeah. if it's coming out in June.
Nice. They found a way through COVID, like they all have. So you definitely enjoyed that more than I did, but mm-hmm. I'm making my way through it slowly but surely. The more people I talk to, the more people are talking about this show.
Yellowstone,
yeah. It's one of those ones. I think it's a slow build. I think especially now up here in Canada, now that's on Amazon Prime, it's getting some interest from people.
If you stick with it, I think you're really rewarded. So
nice.
Yeah, like as I felt, it just only gets better the deeper you get into it. So
nice. We both have probably caught up with WandaVision. It's
finished. It's over now.
It's done.
She's the Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, geez. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, she's only been called the Scarlet Witch since the beginning.
No, they couldn't call her the Scarlet Witch because they didn't have the rights.
So Fox had it at first?
Yeah, Fox had it. So now that they own Fox... they can call it. So it was kind of, that was part of being able to call her Scarlet Witch now. But yes.
I don't want to get into details or anything like that. I obviously enjoyed the show as it went on, you know, compared to how I rated the first episode. But then I felt like episode 8 and episode 9, I don't feel like it really ended on the highest of notes. Especially episode 8, I felt was just a buffer. I don't feel they really progressed.
Episode eight was previously on, so it was all the backstory stuff, right? That's what you're talking about.
Episode eight was kind of like all the backstory before the grand finale. And honestly, I felt episode 8 ended where it started, and I was a little disappointed because they had been progressing things, and then all of a sudden, yeah, you get that. And then episode 9, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think episode 8, it wasn't supposed to progress anything. It was just supposed to give you now that the bad guy was revealed, it was kind of give you the origins of how Catherine Hahn's character came to be, but also the origins of why TV shows, what's Wanda all about. And I think there's some key parts in that as far as like Wanda, one of the reveals was that Wanda had powers before they even started doing experiments on her,
right,
with the Mind Stone. So there's little reveals there.
Was Agnes in the town before Wanda showed up, and it just happened to be that Wanda, encompassed Agnes within her universe?
I don't think so. I think she just let off so much power that Wanda or the Agnes felt it and then was able to penetrate it and get in there. And then she was just trying to like figure out the whole time how she did it. And she was trying to like make her do it again so she could suck it up for her own.
Right.
Power.
So she could soul sucker.
Yeah. Soul sucking.
And I thought I was hearing like, oh, a special guest, special appearance by somebody, and there was no special appearance by anybody.
It was a joke because
I was expecting maybe Doctor Strange to show up because they were trying to link, because witchcraft magic. I thought maybe they'd try to, and wasn't there talks that they were, that this WandaVision was a bit of a precursor to the next Doctor Strange movie, but I didn't see any links there. Maybe it's just character links or something that they're gonna.
Yeah, I think it's
like Agent Rambo. Is she gonna be in Doctor Strange?
No, Agent Rambo is gonna be in Captain Marvel 2. And they wow, they hinted that. But so Paul Bettany, who plays Vision, was teasing to like when he would get interviewed, he was teasing like, oh, he's really excited because he's going to be able to work alongside someone who he's always wanted to work
with. He's really talking about himself.
He was talking about himself. So when people thought there would be like, who's it going to be? Who's he going to be working with? Is it going to be? It was really just himself. So that's kind of funny. So I think it sets up the potential of, so Wanda's done something. Like I still, and Catherine Hahn kind of talks about it, I think at the last episode where she's like, you don't know what you've done. I think Wanda has set something off that's going to have an impact on the Doctor Strange movie. And I wonder if Wanda will even be maybe an antagonist against Doctor Strange, based on like her, based on on her sons, or still based on her grief.
Or sons that don't exist anymore.
Or do they? Because I think in the post-credit scene, she's like in that cabin where there's
That's right. And it's like, mom, help us. Yeah.
There were two
post-credit scenes, actually.
Yeah, there's two post-credit scenes. One setting up Captain Marvel and one setting up Doctor Strange.
Oh, right. Now the Rambo chick gets the aliens say, you gotta come up to space.
See Samuel Jackson in space or whoever.
I'm tired of these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane, your motherfucker.
That is a quote.
Something like that.
Your Honor, our last episode was Your Honor, so you go for it. What happened?
Yeah, I watched episode 2 just out of curiosity, and it kind of became this train wreck that I couldn't stop watching.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I ended up finishing it. I just totally binged it.
And so were you like to the point where like you would watch an episode and you're like, oh man, I gotta keep going. I gotta know what happens next.
Yeah, I think kind of. Although, like I said, it was more like, oh, I'm like totally enjoying the show. It's like so real. It was more like, how much more ridiculous of a situation can these guys get themselves in? You just, like I said, it's like watching a train wreck. So it wasn't like, yeah, it was almost just to watch how much more stupid these guys could get. And they just ended up digging and digging and digging themselves into further and further and further trouble, you know, right up until the end of it, at which, you know, I heard a lot of people were really disappointed with the end of it. I wouldn't say I was disappointed. You know, I know, I think it wasn't the happiest of endings, but maybe
well-deserved.
Maybe well-deserved. Maybe it's just, you know, karma, and just maybe, you know, the good guys don't always win. But you know, sometimes the good guys that you're rooting for in the show aren't necessarily the good guys. So there right. you go. I don't want to ruin it too much, but, you know, yeah. Yeah. Again, I don't know. I think it was just the train wreck was what intrigued me.
You
not so
keep
much.
Your eyes away.
Yeah. Not so much. This show's fantastic because it got super, super soap opera-y and melodramatic near the end, like beyond like, no, like you just unrealistic and just like, there's right. no way you could be this stupid.
If you hadn't committed all those episodes and all your time already, you would have shut it off, but you're like, no, I got to finish it now.
Exactly. You kind of are like, yeah, like how are they going to get themselves out of this if they in fact ever do? Yeah.
Right.
So,
well, I never watched a single episode afterwards, so thank you for, I feel like I have now.
Okay.
I feel
well,
like
you could just pick my brain. I'll just tell you about it after the podcast.
I may one day dive in.
Cape Fear.
That's the one I just wrote Cape Fear just because I just wanted to claim, like the dinosaurs at the end of
Palm
Springs. I was right.
Yeah.
The boat after was Moana.
I went back and screenshot it and zoomed in and sent it to Russ. He, in fact, was right. The Cape Fear boat was named after Disney's princess, Moana.
The Disney princess, Moana.
Even though Cape Fear came out almost 30 years prior.
Oh, do you think Moana Disney movie was based off the boat from
Cape Fear? Moana is probably some very old, ancient Hawaiian name that's been used for many, 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 many things.
Mm. Yes, I'm sure you're right. All right, now it's a little bit.
The greatest part of the episode.
We're going to talk about Sean's favorite movie
of all time.
We're just gonna dip our toes, because really there's no point in diving right in.
Oh God,
we're just gonna dip our toes
help
into
me.
Kind of our movie pairing.
Help me,
which is 1992's David Lynch film, Twin Peaks: Fire Walk With Me.
Oh God.
And so
where
David,
do you start on this movie?
I think
you start as, what did I just watch for 2 hours?
Yeah.
I was so confused by the end of this movie. And then my wife's like, she's like, what's wrong? I was like, well, nothing wrong. I was like, Russ just made me watch the shittiest movie of all time. And it took me about, 8 attempts to get through at like 15 minutes at a time because it's just so bad. And she's like, well, what was it about? I was like, I have no idea.
It's about Laura Palmer.
I have no idea.
It's about Laura Palmer.
Oh, okay. It's about a girl.
It's about a girl.
A very, very messed up girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was this, I felt like this was a student film almost. This is horrible.
David Lynch, I think, believes himself to be a painter,
right?
Who became a filmmaker. I feel like you can't watch his movie and watch it like how you would watch any other movie. I feel like you just need to kind of.
He's a bit of an artiste.
Yeah, like he's painting. He's like creating images, and he wants you to feel stuff. And I don't think it's something where you have to really go. I don't think it's something that you try to make sense of. But you just kind of like, how do you feel when you watch this movie? How do you feel when you see this? And I think it's similar to like a painting. How you could look at a painting and go, oh, I see a dog, and you'll say, well, I see a cat. And then the painter comes up and goes, you're both right.
you know, the
it's a dog cat.
It's a dog cat. And so I think you can get whatever you want out of Twin Peaks. I just find
And what did you get out of it, Russ?
I've always enjoyed Twin Peaks. I'm not obsessed with it, but I do.
I never watched the original television show.
Okay. So I appreciate everything that it is. I appreciate that it when it first came out in the 90s, that it was just like such a huge hit on TV. And I think it also, it inspired a lot of shows that we watch now and consider classics like Lost or something like that, it was like, there was really nothing like it in the world back then.
Back then, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so to the point where it's very hard to look at it objectively now, because there's so much that's kind of evolved from Twin Peaks that have maybe done it a little bit differently that kind of make sense more in a modern state. But yeah, it's just, I just find the whole thing interesting. I find David Lynch interesting. I find, the whole franchise of this whole thing, how there was these two seasons on ABC and then it was canceled. And then he made this movie. And then so many years later, it came back. So in 2000, was it last year? 2019?
Something like that.
There was a full new series on Showtime or whatever. All the same characters pretty much.
And I think it's because of the cult following it maybe had, it still carried a bit of weight enough for them to think about, obviously they did more than think about, they did, revitalize the show, right?
Well, I think there's even there's a scene, when they did it in the 90s and the last episode in season two where Laura says something like, "See you in 20 years or something like that. And then that's exactly what happens. It's so weird, and I like the weirdness of it. I like the ambition of it. I don't know.
It was too student filmy for me. Was a little too out there. I appreciate it. I get it. I get the whole artiste thing. But by this time, he had done movies like Dune, which was friggin' fabulous. I know a lot of people might not like that movie, but I really like Dune. Sorry, I didn't do enough research on David Lynch's past movies prior to this. So
I think one of the bigger movies that still have stuck out for me was Mulholland Drive. And that was a little bit more recently. But before that, he did it was Eraserhead, I think, was a bigger one that he was part of.
That was more his calling card, wasn't it? In the day, Eraserhead?
I think so. I think that was one of the first things that kind of really got him noticed.
Yeah.
And then he did Dune, and then he did Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart. And these were all kind of movies that were actually getting him very well known. And then, he kind of went into absurdity, and then he started doing Lost Highway and Mulholland Drive. In the late 90s, that kind of brought him up to the attention again. And then he's kind of, again, faded into the...
I love the quote I found on this movie that someone reviewed it. And just the tail end of their quote was, "It contains a considerable amount of sex, drugs, violence, very loud music, and inexplicable imagery." And I was like, yes. Exactly. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, he's got a lot of high profile actors, and Kiefer Sutherland's in it at a point. Chris Isaacs, high profile, maybe not such a high profile actor. It's littered throughout with some other high profile actors. Do you think they had any idea of what they were getting into, or they even knew David Lynch's vision? Because,
he'd already had done two seasons on TV, so they knew what they were getting into.
I guess, but I don't know, man. Just to see Kiefer Sutherland standing shoulder to shoulder with a screaming David Lynch because he's got earbuds in his... it was just so odd. I just found it odd, almost disturbing. Did I just take a bunch of magic mushrooms? What am I watching? I'm having a bad trip, That's what it felt like, a really bad trip.
Yeah, I think he just I think people I would assume actors were very inspired by his his innovation and his just his it just was he was doing something different, and and a lot of his films were very popular back then. I mean David Bowie's in the freaking thing.
Yeah,
David Bowie's in it. So obviously, you know, the guy's an artist. David Lynch is an artist. He's a genius. He just doesn't make movies like anybody else, and he obviously he had people behind him. But and most of the people from the TV show came back. Kyle MacLachlan actually didn't, who plays Agent Cooper, which is kind of like the main protagonist in the show, didn't really want to. He didn't want to be typecasted, so he didn't want a huge part. So they had to cut down his part. Although I'm sure.
What is he, just like a clairvoyant or something, like speaking with Laura in like purgatory or some sort of? Is he on a different plane? You know what I mean?
I think he's got some sort of connection to the afterlife or the supernatural for sure. I don't think it's truly ever really explained.
I don't think he had a lot of people behind him on this because it cost $10 million and only made $4 million.
Oh.
So, I mean, I imagine the only people that went and saw this were either super fanboys or people that went and saw it opening day and then told everybody else not to bother watching it.
100%. No. I think it was booed. I think it wasn't liked by critics initially, but again, it's all kind of fit.
It was probably a personal project.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he had he'd already made some money by then. You know, it was just like, I'm going to make my film regardless of, I mean, I can't see the way it was presented that any studio executive stepped in to modify it at all, unless it was X-rated or something and they had to tone it down, which probably was at one point. But yeah, this looks like they just said, okay, David, you need to get this out of your system. Let's do it.
And I think he lost some creative control in season two of the show. So maybe this was his little bit of like a farewell or kind of like a prequel, but yet trying to kind of conclude because the show was all about.
Maybe Laura, he had some creative things he wanted to do with the show that he wasn't able to do. And he did it through, he used this movie as his gateway to get it out. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. This movie sucked.
You just couldn't understand.
And again, were these guys supposed to be in high school? Like, we got 30-year-old high school kids here?
It's 90210 shit. It's like...
Oh, exactly. But again, I'm just reiterating what we've talked about a couple times on the podcast. It's just like, no one gets high school kids right. Except... Yeah, this is where we talk about things that we're watching outside of the podcast and all that. As you see, I finished Your Honor. And then I jumped on, speaking of a show that actually does high school kids right. Well, actually, I kind of hope it didn't do high school kids right, but I have a feeling in this day and age it did. I got into Euphoria and I binged it and I finished it. And that was one where I could not stop watching it. I know it was a little harsh, it's a little dark, and it's got some, you know, pretty strong subject matter in it, but the cinematography in this show is fucking unreal. I've seen some of the behind the scenes stuff that they have done on some of these shots where they try and do all these transitions practically and they're not doing it through CGI or anything like that. There is some amazing cinematography and hence scene choreography going on in pretty much throughout the episode. Like, it is just, if you're not enthralled by the story and maybe the subject matter and, you know, the nudity that's all throughout it, yeehaw! The cinematography and just the eye candy alone of this show was just enough to keep me going. Amazing show. I hope there's a season two coming because this and the editing and everything. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm ranting a bit, but yeah, I as you can tell, I really enjoyed this show.
So they have released a couple of like
special episodes, right?
Did you watch those as well?
I watched the diner one. I got about halfway through it and then I realized I think I'm gonna watch an episode with them all in the diner, and I wasn't in the mood for it at that point. So I'm about halfway through that one. Yes. No, I haven't seen the 10th episode, which revolves around Jules and what happened after high school, and her and Rue separated at the train station there. But yeah, Zendaya. How do you pronounce the lead actresses? She's like Madonna and Cher. She just goes by one name, Zendaya.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You think she just started acting and then they are, oh, what's your name? Oh, just Zendaya. And you think she just had enough clout when she was, I mean, she can't be more than early 20s.
No, but look how much shit she's already been in.
Yeah, exactly. And I've always known her as Zendaya, so maybe she just has no last name, or she's just kind of cool and decided I'm going to have a stage name right off the bat without sort of earning it.
Like Awkwafina.
Who's that?
She's an actress as well. An up and coming. She was in Crazy Rich Asians, and she's in a bunch of other.
Awkwafina? Cool. Isn't that a bottled water?
Awkwafina? Yeah, her name is Awkwafina. I don't know what came first, the bottled water or the actress, but I'm assuming she's probably like 24, 25. So how old?
And all wet.
And she's all wet.
She's wet behind the ears. You know what? I never finished Breaking Bad. So I've gone back and started Breaking Bad. I've actually done a lot more than started it. I'm almost done season 3 now. So I got 2 seasons. I've picked up right where I left off about, oh, many, many, many years ago.
So you didn't go back to the first season?
No, I did. I went all the way. Did. Even wow. though I had previously watched up to halfway through season 3, I went back and started brand new again, just because it had been, what, 5-something years, if not more. And I knew a little bit, but I wanted just to get, I wanted to do a complete refresh. And yeah, I've been binging that like crazy. Nice. That's great. It's great. Just because I've never been able to be part of the Breaking Bad conversation, you know, and I feel if I wait too long, I'll never be able to be a part of it. And
yeah, I think it's more than cult for Breaking Bad. I think it's, yeah, it's
a piece of art almost. It's a piece of art
for sure. I my thought it would be like in 100, 200 years, you know, they're talking about Shakespeare and they're talking about Breaking Bad. And Better Call Saul is still relevant. Obviously, they're still making that show, and that's just a prequel.
Is it, so it's before he meets Walter White?
Correct.
Oh, okay. So kind of the hijinks that Saul Goodman got up to prior to getting into the methamphetamine business.
Right. So Leah, my wife, has never seen Breaking Bad, but we're watching Better Call Saul together. So she'll, once we finish Better Call Saul, then I'll get her onto Breaking Bad and I'll watch Breaking Bad again with her. And I think that'll be like a fun way of watching. A couple of movies on the Crave. I've been really hitting the Crave hard.
You always hit the Crave. It's like you live on the Crave.
I feel like I'm not really getting into Netflix. I'm kind of,
you know, I've been hitting the Crave a lot too. Yeah. Other than Breaking Bad,
there's some stuff on the Crave.
Okay, sorry, I've interrupted long enough. Go.
No, that's fine. In and of itself is like a filmed. They filmed a live production of a show that ran in New York. And in the actor, it's a one man show. The actor's name is Derek Delguado, Derek Delguadios.
Okay.
And so the show is called Derek Delguadios In and of Itself. It is like the film starts pretty much asking you to do 2 things. It asks you to like shut off all distractions, shut off your phone, focus on what you're about to see. And the second thing it kind of says is it kind of flashes and it tells you to do that with text. Excuse me.
Oh my God, Russ has the COVID.
I'm going to die. And then you start to hear the monologue of the main actor, and Derek is, and he kind of just talks about a little bit about like, you can see a show, and I'm going to put in my own words here and I may get things wrong, but he says, you can see a show and you can come to a live show and it's very easy for me to lie to you. And it's even easier for me to lie to you through a movie or through a television show. Cause you know, what you can see can be tricks of the camera or whatever.
Right.
He says, but if you get into this, if you believe what you're about to see, then, you know, you're kind of going to, and I guess maybe it was more of just like an ask. He's like, what I'm asking for you is to just come with us and believe what you're about to see. And don't worry about, is this a lie? Just enjoy the show. That, and he probably said it in a completely different way, but that's how I kind of, interpreted it as. So I'm like, okay, I'm watching the show. I'm going to just accept whatever I'm watching is true. And oh my God, it blew me away.
What's the premise? You've kind of dangled this carrot in front of us.
I'm not telling you anymore. Telling you anymore. You got it.
Is it a documentary?
No, it's like a filming of his live show. There's a live audience. It's actually, it follows, and as far as I can tell, it follows one show, but it also kind of takes other recordings from other shows.
Is he a comedian?
I wouldn't call him a comedian. There are funny bits to it, but he just tells stories, and I'll say one thing. He is also like kind of a dark. He's into dark magic, so he's also a magician as well. For whatever that's worth.
Does he do magic?
There might be some magic in it. But all I can say is Derek Del Guadios, whatever the fuck his last name is, in and of itself, check it out. But go with it.
Do what he says.
No distractions. Enjoy it for what it is. Don't worry about if it's right or true or not.
You watch it late at night, or is it something that you feel you need a little bit of focus on?
I watched late at night. I watched it on the iPad in bed, and I got teary eyed. I don't know why, but maybe.
Are you drinking scotch again, Russ? You seem to get sad when you drink scotch. Maybe you shouldn't drink scotch anymore.
But once you watch it, I feel like we should talk about it because there's lots of interesting things to talk about with that show. I'm also watching It's Supper Time with Maddie Madison. I think what is his name?
It's Supper Time?
It's Supper Time.
Is this a cooking show?
It's a cooking show.
Okay. You like those cooking shows, eh?
I like a good cooking show.
You're good. Russ makes a really mean ass really mean salsa. Best salsa I've ever had in my life. Russ makes it from scratch. Pico de Gallo. Pico de Gallo. You want to be really specific. It's the best. That's what it is. It's the best stuff on earth.
But Maddie Madison, I think his name is. Super funny, super charismatic, super out there, crazy Canadian chef. He was always like popping up on my Instagram already. And I was always going, who is this guy? And then I saw that he has a show on Crave called It's Supper Time. And, oh man, the guy you'd probably really like. He's got tattoos all the way up to his eyeballs. He's like swears like no tomorrow. He constantly tells people to fuck off, as he's doing stuff. He's like sweating the whole time.
Gordon Ramsay, but with tattoos.
No, not rude like Gordon Ramsay, just more like irrelevant and just like a just silly.
How has Gordon Ramsay not been had his nose broken the way he talks to people?
I think a lot of that is an act. I think a lot of it is for show.
Because if not, the guy's like super dick.
Yeah, I think he's made a career kind of being that person, but I don't know if that's really who that person is.
Let's hope that Gordon Ramsay is a bit of a gentleman when the camera stops rolling.
All right, smell you later. Thanks, Sean. Love you, buddy.
Smell you too. Love you, man. Enjoy your work week, everybody.
I like this and you like that. It's-